also don't care about feminism. Your favorite show is Entourage.
To be honest, when I found out the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I lost interest anyway.
I wonder if I know what you mean.
I wonder if you wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 346, and you know, we're out in the sticks. It's your boy, Ify Whitey, waiting in the booth with me, all my friends. So let me introduce you to Dams. First up, we have an esteemed critic, good at what he does, but also Christmas Addy, currently in hibernation. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Well, I'll tell you, Ify, I've not done a book recommendation in a while, so I thought I would be fancy because I'm in the middle of one right now that I'm really digging. It's called It Was Vulgar and It Was Beautiful. It's by Jack Lowry, and it is about Grand Fury, which was a collective of artists that were part of ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power in the 1980s. And the graphics that these guys and women created over the course of ACT UP's life really kind of cemented their place in activist history. Before Grand Fury began, they created the Silence Equals Death with the pink triangle, which is the thing that everybody's seen on a million t-shirts and posters. But they came up with the bloody handprint. The government has blood on its hands. Like a lot of memorable things that if you ever see photos of the protests from back then, you will see these posters, you will see these t-shirts, the Read My Lips with two men or two women kissing. And it was like they were artists, but they also, some people had come from the advertising world, so they knew how to really like create these really indelible word and image things that could communicate a lot of what they were trying to, the message they were trying to get out there. And I think anybody who's interested in how to, you know, make signs for a protest or how to sort of encapsulate big complicated ideas and tackle them and boil them down into like a thing that people can take with them, this book is really valuable, and the work that these folks did lives on. So yeah, if this is your cup of tea, check out It Was Vulgar and It Was Beautiful.
It's a good title.
Right. Yeah, that's a solid title. Well, you know,
if
who
he
else
says
is
that
solid?
A lot the next day.
You know who else is solid? It's none other than the Queen of the Midwest herself. Super Festival programmer, producer, Drea Clark. What is good?
You thought he was going to say, you know who else is vulgar and beautiful, didn't you?
Yeah. You're right. I guess I should be happy that I ended up with solid out of those options. Although I take vulgar and beautiful. An aspirational vulgar and beautiful.
Own it.
Okay, so my what's good is so much more, I was going to say pedestrian, but honestly just domestic than what Alonzo is. But when I'm counting my blessings, I was recently turned on to, like, everything in our world, everything's bad for us. You guys know that, right? Like everything that you do or enjoy or see is wrong or bad in some way.
Of course.
That's just how they were built. And one of those things, dryer sheets. I didn't know that. I got schooled on it recently, but I now own wool balls for my dryer. And when I tell you, I feel like earth angel. Like, oh, don't worry about me. I have 6 wool balls. I put them into the dryer and they handle the static cling. And apparently there was all sorts of chemicals. Whatever. I'm getting chemicals in everything. I'm not kidding myself. I live in Los Angeles. But like, my smugness from having wool balls for my dryer fuels me.
I love a felted dryer ball for sure. But I'll tell you, all of mine roll away, never to be seen again. Like I had 6 of them and I'm now down to 1. And the ones that never leave me are the ones that are made of silicone and they're all nubbly so that they stop rolling at some point. But so like love your woolly balls, but you know, corral them.
I want you to know I lose nothing. I've been using the same 7 bobby pins in my hair for, I'm going to say, at least 15 years. Like, that's the defining character of me, is I keep track of dumb things.
Well, so, and in the same way that I can't keep a plant alive, I can't keep a woolen dryer ball in my laundry bag. So kudos to you, madam.
Yes. So now I've really earned my what's good. Thank you, Alonzo, for the assist.
Last dryer ball statement. I have all 4 of mine still because I learned that too. And the only thing is they get wrapped up whenever you do sheets, and then that's when I really lose them, is when they're in the sheets and I have to remember, okay, remember to be searching for that dryer ball. But
pocket of your bathrobe.
Yes.
So I am also team dryer ball. But you know who else I'm on the team for? Well, it's a friend. It's a fellow alumni of the Upright Citizens Brigade, a fellow comedian, a fellow writer, a fellow movie enjoyer, a fellow amazing podcast guest, a fellow who I've shared the stage with, shared the screen with, I'm sure. I'm not going to look it up. I'm just going to say we've done it.
Yeah, probably.
But it's none other than the writer and comedian Joey Clift. What's good? How you doing, Joey?
Yo, yeah, thanks for having me. So I also want to talk about dryer balls. I had something else, but
hell yeah.
You bring up a good point. Like, everybody, we're all on the same page. I have never been more focused in my life than when I'm pulling like sheets out of the dryer when I've used dryer balls, because it's like, yeah, I know I'm gonna lose one, and I'm just like, okay, I'm counting, I'm putting them in their little like sock that they came with. Yes.
What I'm hearing is I am somehow the last of the four of us to have dryer balls. What is happening? I've been slipping, but thank you for being team dryer ball, Joey. That feels good.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We love the earth, Drea. I don't know about you.
Oh no.
Another what's good for me I want to talk about is I just learned a couple of days ago, I'm a very big fan of like post-apocalyptic media, like Mad Max Furiosa, I'm very excited about. And I'm a very big fan of Garfield, the comic strip character Garfield. And I just found out that Mad Max Furiosa and Garfield come out on the same day. It's like, I believe May 24th. It's basically my own personal Barbenheimer, and I am so excited. I don't think anybody else is excited about this day as I am. I've already told my girlfriend to clear the calendar. We're going to like do a double feature. We'll probably eat some lasagna in the middle. It's going to be great.
Wait,
Garfield,
what's your,
Fury Road.
I was going to say, what's the portmanteau of that? Garfiosa?
I think that Garfiosa is the one that I like. There's also Furiofeld, maybe. There's a lot of, look, there's a couple of different ways.
Furiote.
Yeah,
Furiote. Yeah, Nermalosa. Look, whatever you want to call it, that's going to be a good day for me.
Arbuckle Fury Road.
I'm very excited that you are excited about those two things. That's good. I also like approaching cinema with the idea of, what's my Barbenheimer? It's a good question.
Everyone deserves
we should all
at least
ask.
One.
Exactly. If it was good with you.
Oh, man. What is good with me? Well, look, let me just say a lot of things. You know, went up to Mammoth, did some snowboarding to close out the season. We're getting towards the end of the season here. You know, still unpacking, which that's, you know, very. And you know, still getting my paint on over here, you know, got my little guys. But I think on the front of painting, and you'll get into this once I finally break down Warhammer for the both of you, but Games Workshop / Warhammer, the company's Warhammer now, has been doing things like retconning stories to make it more inclusive. And there's a the big discourse on Twitter was about Warhammer having female custodes, which are kind of like the Space Marines with spears and stuff. And
iffy, did everybody love that?
Oh, you can imagine.
Everybody who plays Warhammer get excited about that?
Everyone was so normal about it.
Yeah.
So normal about this
just
fake
totally
grimdark.
Yeah. There's no crazy fan art. It's all just very respectful.
You know, and there's no one like clipping one day, you know, stock trades to say that it's on the downward trend, as if that's how you track stocks. It's very it is very wild. And there's just, once again, I'll probably be talking about this till we reach whatever the end of this, but of course all of the grifters from this Gamergate 2 has jumped in on it, and has and there's one guy specifically who is the worst, but all of he's like just not even hiding the fact that he's a grifter, because he'll join a discourse and then at the end he'll be like, if you believe that I'm on the right side of history, you gotta subscribe to my Patreon.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's working.
Your pop culture stories keep me young and angry.
So I want to say that there's no way that could work, but also I'm sure if I clicked on that person's Patreon, he's making $40,000 a month.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm doing it all wrong.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's it is truly a dream. But all in all, I do like that the company itself is kind of standing on it and really replying to all the chuds online and making the game more inclusive for everyone. So shout out to them on that. Thank you, Warhammer. Let's keep it rolling. Let's keep making weirdo, sexist, racist, all of the above mad. But first, we have a show to do. Today's show has us spending some quality time with some Sasquatches. Then we'll nominate some silent performances to the Hall of Excellence. But first, it's time for Itadic, our movie news segment where we ask the question, is this important? Do we care? As we read through the week's movie news. So, Drea, why don't you go ahead and kick this off?
All right, CinemaCon, where I was in attendance, wrapped up this past weekend.
Wow.
I know, it was probably in every write-up that you read about it, that I was there. It wrapped up this past weekend, and the convention of major theaters and studios was the occasion for lots of hotly anticipated blockbuster trailers and announcements. As you all know, I try and avoid trailers at all costs. So, yes, not lost on me that the fact I went to CinemaCon, which is nothing but trailers, is deeply ironic. Anyway, the head of the National Association of Theater Owners, the other NATO, Michael O'Leary, had a warning for the big studios. Don't put all your eggs in the blockbuster basket. Quote, it is not enough to rely solely on blockbusters, O'Leary said. We must have a strong and vibrant market for movies with smaller or medium-sized budgets. Andrea Diane Clark cheered at that moment. Specifically, he was referring to the performance of Godzilla Minus One and American Fiction. The point was not just that studios needed to make more mid-budget films, but that those films needed to be supported and given theatrical runs. I cheered again. Is this important? Do you care?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've been saying a version of this forever, which is like, bring back the mid-budget adult drama. You know, bring back other kinds of movies. I mean, we're just coming off a weekend where the number one movie was Civil War. And, you know, I have my issues with that movie, but it is not, you know, it's not Captain America Civil War, you know, it's just Civil War. And I think there are a lot of different kind of films out there that will put butts in seats that don't involve, like, you know, giant, you know, crazy 3D CGI spectacle. And frankly, if you look at the last few months at your Madam's Web and whatnot, you know, like those movies are not reliable per se. And there is burnout happening and people are interested in other stuff. But the upside of that is they're interested in other stuff. And so that other stuff needs to exist and needs to be projected.
And the idea of, you know, we talked about the last few weeks, like Neon, IFC, and this week A24 with Alex Garland, Civil War, and the David Dismalchian, like
Late Night with the Devil, yeah.
Thank you. And so between the three of those streamers, the last 4 weeks have been the highest box office they've ever had. The three smaller studios. And, you know, those are like indie studios. People are loving that stuff. That's all very exciting.
Yeah.
So being at a convention where it was a trip anyway, because all of the studios are there and they're shucking their wares, but that the whole focus of it was appeasing and giving offerings to theater owners. And so the entire focus of rhetoric was around the specialness of going to the cinema. And obviously I agree with that wholeheartedly and heard different arguments for what's so meaningful about it. But then having it put out in a like, oh, hey, you want to know the budget part of it as well? Because that, of course, is all anyone seems to care about. If you don't care about dryer balls, you are going to care about budget. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, yes. I definitely, you know, second everything that everybody's saying. I'm sure you all have talked at length about like, the beautiful thing about mid-budget movies is that if a mid-budget movie fails, it's not going to tank the entire studio. You know, if you make a movie with a $300 million budget and it bombs, it's like you can only do that twice before you have to like sell the company, you know. And I think that there is something really nice about having those like lower budget, mid-budget movies like $10 million, $20 million, where you can just like take some swings. And if it does well, then you have like an Everything Everywhere All at Once on your hands that makes its money back like tenfold. And if it doesn't do well, it's fine, you know. Although something I do want to shout out from O'Leary's talk is that in the Variety article that you sent us, he said at the end, he had like a little verbal gaffe. He said, the future of the film industry is limited. And then he corrected himself saying, limitless. I meant limitless. And I just think it's so funny. It's so funny that they called that out in the Variety article. Is that this totally. The line is, he said before correcting himself, Freudian with his Freudian slip, limitless. Like, why you gotta throw shade on O'Leary, Variety writer?
They had to, because the amount of corporate dorks that get to speak at this thing is incredible. Like, it was the most corporate environment. I'm not in that world a lot. A lot of people with like the suit with no tie, like that kind of aesthetic. And those guys like on stage, and then they're like making, I just was like, oh, all these guys, there's so many of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, Drea, you at a function like this reminds me of what Robert Altman always used to say about studios is like, you know, they make shoes and I make gloves. You know, so I feel like you were surrounded by shoe people, and you're like, these gloves are really great if somebody wants to buy them.
It was very funny, like the movies that all reference, and you know, everybody, like John M. Chu was the focus of the luncheon, and they did, you know, a big rollout for Wicked, and in addition to Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo being there, like Jeff Goldblum was there, like they had all these things, and everybody got a light up tulip, like blah blah blah. I was like, yeah, Wicked, sure. But you know how many movies you could make for the amount of Wicked, and nobody'd seen any of the movies. Yeah. I was there. We were there largely. Bentonville was being recognized via Gina Davis because one of our longtime partners, Coca-Cola, has the Coca-Cola Refreshing Filmmaker series. So like, I got to meet with all of them, and they're like young and emerging and not broken yet. So that was encouraging. That was the gloves part of it.
Nice.
All right. Well, looks like I'm up next, and you know, we're gonna take a step away from movies and talk something movie adjacent and go to the Coachella, baby, because Will Smith made a surprise appearance to sing Men in Black. Los Angeles was quiet this weekend as all the cool kids were away at Coachella weekend one. While we wouldn't normally have too much movie news to report from a music festival, one of the many surprises of the weekend was movie related. During his set, J Balvin brought out none other than Will Smith, and the two of them performed Will Smith's Men in Black, complete with sunglasses, a black suit, and a giant alien backdrop. Is this important? Do you care? And why was I invited in my alien makeup to be a part of this performance?
You truly should have. Also, speaking of dorks in suits on stage, I loved Men in Black. Like, we've talked about Men in Black. Oh, Alonzo and I got to talk to the director of Men in Black.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes, we did. But I only saw the thing of this, like, Will Smith, I'm like, I feel like you should have waited till you were like 68 to bust out the Men in Black, right? Like, to really, I was like, I just saw the photos of it. I'm like, do the kids in the audience know Men in Black? Like, right? Is there a cultural relevance here that I'm missing?
I think they would maybe know the song, if not the movie, but like,
do they?
You're asking me what the kids know? I don't know. But my thing is that, like, I feel like that Will Smith is now launching on the next 5 years of the Please Like Me Again tour.
Ooh, fair.
You know, I think that he wisely sort of tried to keep the press and stuff as minimal as possible after, you know, winning an Academy Award because of all the other stuff around that. And then, you know, he made that movie that, like, was for Apple, that was like a really intense, like, escaped slave movie or whatever that nobody wanted to watch. And I think that he's kind of realizing that he so spectacularly blew decades worth of goodwill in one ill thought out moment, and that he is now gonna like ingratiate himself in a crazy, like, remember, lovable me, you know, I moved to Bel Air, like whatever it takes to like have us like Will Smith again. I think we're going to watch him do what it takes.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I definitely saw this on Twitter and, you know, geeked out because I'm a dork and I saw Will Smith in a suit doing Men in Black. You know, but my second thought was like, why aren't you doing Wild Wild West? That's a fantastic song, too.
There you go.
If Will Smith just did a tour of all of his like 90s movie themes, I would show up to that.
Yeah.
Although one thing I do have to say is that, like, watching it, like, I probably watched this clip like three or four times because it just brought me so much joy, is that, like, he just seemed a little rusty. Like, he wasn't like crisp 90s Will Smith. It definitely seems like he's like lost a couple steps, and it's like, and he was only out there for 45 seconds.
Yeah.
So like part of me is like, did you like find out that you were doing this that morning?
Right. Well, that's, I feel like he did it for the people like us who were doing Couchella and watching it from their couches. That's what I mean. Like, were those 20 somethings in the desert who were born in 1997 when that movie came out, and they were like, yeah, it's the dad from King Richard or whatever. Another cultural milestone, I'm sure.
DJ Jazzy Jeff would have killed it.
It does put me out to hear, like, because I know what you're talking about, because I had a couple things, too, of like, ooh, he's a little off with that jump step, huh?
Yeah, but it's like it's 45 seconds, so it's like, oh, you couldn't have, like, stretched a little beforehand?
He's like, nah, not at all. I just got off the PJ and straight to the stage.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're checking out that Sasquatch sunset. You know, physical media is one of our favorite topics here on Max Film. We've been baiting Alonzo to tap his sign, reminding you that physical media is still out there and more important than ever.
Well, now you can have your very own sign to tap. The sign says they can't delete my physical media, and it's up now on the Maximum Fun merch store. The hand letter design was done by our own producer, Marissa, and it's a sign that you can tap whenever you need to remind people that streaming is transient at best and Blu-rays are forever.
Now, we will put a link in the show notes to make it easy for you, but the URL is maxfunstore.com/products/tap-the-sign. Yes, love speaking out a URL. Get your own, hang it above your collections, DVD, Blu-ray, VHS, Laserdisc, tap at will.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ivy Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Joey Clift,
Alonzo Duralde.
Today's film premiered at Sundance back in January. It was directed by David and Nathan Zellner and stars Riley Keough, Jesse Eisenberg, Nathan Zellner, Krzysztof Zajac-Dinek, and a bunch of wild animals. Alonzo, nothing brings me as much joy than to ask you to give us a brief synopsis of Sasquatch Sunset.
Here we go.
Damn it. I kept thinking, oh, it's Drea's week. And then it was like, we did the BOCO and she got to do that one. I'm like, God damn it. All right. So, yes, the four people you mentioned star in this film, but are rather unrecognizably made up as a Sasquatch family. And they make their way through, I'm thinking, I mean, I thought it was Alaska, but I know they wind up somewhere in California at a real place. In any event, they live in the wilderness and they do all the other things that they do in the wilderness and start stumbling upon evidence that something is wrong. There's this sudden wide flat road that goes on all the way into the horizon. There's X's spray painted on the side of trees, and then later trees are found fallen down in the water with the X on it. And they are kind of grunting their way through, and one of them is pregnant and gives birth at one point. They fend off predators. They don't fend off predators sometimes. You know, they exist in the world, blissfully unaware of humanity until humanity's encroachment becomes something that they can't quite ignore anymore. And will they ever be seen outside of a blurry photograph? Who can say? They are Sasquatches. And that is Sasquatch Sunset.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I think it's a good point to bring up the spoilers. Like we go a lot of directions on this show. Some things it's very easy to talk around it. This one, like there's no dialogue in this movie. There's grunting and shitting. So the story is
the two human emotions.
My two favorite emotions: inside grunting and shitting. Exactly. And so the story points I think are really key to get into. So this is certainly one that I imagine will cover a lot of story ground. But trust me when I say it won't ruin anything for you in the sense that you will still be very surprised by everything.
If April Wolf's dictum of it's how a movie does what it does rather than what it does, this is that movie.
Yeah.
Where to begin? Did Marissa give us a starting off launching point? She's very good.
Oh yeah. We can kick this off. One of actually, yes. Did you know anything about this film going in? Which I will start. Across the board, we know that a lot of us here at Max Film HQ tend to avoid spoilers and as much information about movies, and we try our best to go in without knowing anything about it. I, when kind of like getting the show times and eventually getting the chance to watch it, kind of like got the info on like, oh, okay. So Jesse Eisenberg's in this. Okay. Riley Keough. Okay. So maybe they're kind of watching these Sasquatch. Maybe it's them kind of finding them in the wild. So it was very funny to me to eventually realize, oh, they've been here the whole time.
Yeah, this one, the knowing about this is a broader question for me because if you're familiar with the Zellner brothers' work, David and Nathan, who are brothers who made this, have made a variety of films. They have a film called Damsel that I took in when I was watching every Western known to humankind. And they have a really unique way of twisting a lot of contemporary mores and social cues and expectations, and then delivering them in unusual packaging. And so when this movie, you know, as Alonzo said, we're following this family. And first and foremost, if you haven't seen any trailer or imagery, the Sasquatch costumes, the suits, are incredible. They are super lifelike in that they're super unappealing. Like, they feel very natural because they're not like, oh, and we made the, it's not like Smurfette, right? Like, oh, we made the girl one, the one with lipstick. Like, no, she's got a deep receding hairline. Yeah, and like,
they're all missing links, basically.
Yeah, very, very much. And, but the design of them, it's, the whole thing is so visceral and so tactile. And that's from like the suits on up, like the, what nature feels like in terms of, oh, it's just, if you're out in the woods, you're covered in grime. There's dust on you. You're getting bitten. You're hungry. You're sitting. And so it's very real in that way. And then what you're learning about these characters who are miming, well, grunt miming, grunting and shitting while miming. Like, it's a really unique way to both world build, but also story craft, like how they're navigating. And obviously we've talked about, strangely, we have talked about other films that are silent films for the large part, but this one, there's so much effort done in this very, like, that, ugh, like just the disgustingness of it. And it's so grody at times, but it's also just like, some of it's for humor and some of it's just like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Things shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's just a thing.
Well,
that's the big takeaway.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Just like, things shit, you know?
Everybody poops.
Everybody poops.
I think Dre, you totally nailed it as far as like the spoiler of it all, because I did see the trailer for this, which normally I always try to avoid them, but I didn't know what I was going to see, but they showed it and I was like, oh, okay. But I am almost kind of glad in this case I did, because then it allowed me to sort of hit the ground running and I didn't have that moment of like, wait, what's going on here? Or when are the people showing up? Like, what? Like, I got a sense of like, okay, that's them in the outfits. There is no dialogue. The grunting and shitting is it. And so that sort of enabled me to like be into what it was doing from the get-go, as opposed to like overthinking it and wondering what kind of, you know, what this movie was going to be. But yeah, it is, you know, They, you know, really what happens is you get four seasons, you know, like they are sort of nomadic and they're making their way through these vast and snowy woods and mountains, and it's spring, summer, fall, winter. And that's kind of it, you know. So in a weird way, it's almost like a nature mockumentary, I guess. You know, like I feel like the Disney nature version of this would have like Emma Thompson on the soundtrack saying, oh, they find themselves seeking out their traditional waterhole, you know. But it's nothing but big swings, and a lot of them land.
I'm wondering for Joey, because we briefly touched on before you'd even seen this that you were interested in, and that you said like in native culture, there's a lot of sort of Sasquatch or Yeti imagery like built into other storytelling or whatever. And so I was watching this again. This was the second time I'd seen it, trying to like puzzle through if I was seeing. I was like, oh, is there mythology? Like I found a lot of like I said, contemporary things in terms of literally consent, like things like that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, but then I was like, oh, I wonder if there's a broader thing. So you had just mentioned that you were interested if it would be bringing any of that to the table.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that. So, hey, everybody, my name's Joey Clift. I'm Roll Cowlitz, grew up in the Tulalip Reds, native, you get it. So I'm of two minds of this as a movie. I'm kind of watching this from two lenses. One is the lens of this as a movie, which, you know, I think a lot of us have kind of covered it. I went in pretty cold. I hadn't seen the trailer. I just knew that it was like four actors in heavy prosthetics doing a movie as Sasquatches where they don't really have any dialogue. And I was in. I love big swings. I love weird chances in movies. And to a lot of what Alonzo was saying, like, it does feel like a lot, like, it does feel like there are points where it's like, this maybe could have been a little bit shorter. And like, you know, but I do think that, for the most part, like it's a valid piece of art, and like I appreciate what it does like narratively, and there are some moments that are really like harrowing and beautiful in just like it as a movie. So the other side that I'm viewing it from is just like, to give context, is that Sasquatch is a creature that is prominent in a lot of Pacific Northwest tribes lore. Like the word Sasquatch is I forget the tribe's name, but it's a tribe based out of like kind of British Columbia, and it's like, growing up on the Tulalip Reds, it's like I would hear Sasquatch stories from like elders. It's like if you go to my tribe's casino about like 20 minutes north of Portland, there's like a carved wooden Sasquatch in like the gas station in front of our casino. You know, like it's, if you're like on the res and you're driving through Pacific Northwest res, you're probably going to pass by like people's houses with like just like carved wooden Sasquatch statues in front of their houses. They just made because they think Sasquatch is cool. And it's like he's a just like an important cultural figure. So I think that for me, like watching this, you know, I was definitely watching it with the eye of like, do the Zellner brothers know that? You know, and I don't think they did. And, you know, that's like kind of some of my issues with the film is like any creature in culture is going to be any like, you know, fictional character or creature within lore of culture is going to be like created it as a response to something in that culture, like using Godzilla as an example. Like Godzilla is a creature that like can only really come out of like post-war Japan after nuclear weapons were used and stuff like that. So you know, if you have like a Godzilla movie made completely without Japanese artists, it's going to be missing like 90% of the texture that you need for Godzilla to work. And, you know, like, it's the same thing with, like, Dragon Ball Z. It's like, if you made a Dragon Ball Z movie and there weren't any Japanese artists involved, you'd be like, I don't think this is going to be good, and maybe this should get dragged. And, you know, like, so I think that for me, it's like, I appreciated artistically what the Zellner brothers did with this movie, but I do feel like they kind of missed the point of what Sasquatch is as far as just, like, the origins of the creature in Pacific Northwest native lore. And, you know, it's like, and I do think that, like, not to like, spoil the end of the movie, but it's like, I was kind of, like, watching this with the eye of, like, do they research this? Do they know what the Sasquatch is? Or are they just, like, excited that there's a fun, you know, group of monkey people in the woods, you know, or whatever?
Well, I got such a strong taste of the, like, primary commentary in this beyond family dynamics or male-female relationships or whatever was the idea of colonization, like that it's these people who are having their like land impeded on and completely like putting them at risk, and they're overtaken by it, by like the, and we're seeing it with the small signs. Like, it's the element that Alonzo brought up, the like first time they wander the corner and they see like that spray painted X on this gigantic tree, and all of us know what that means. You're like, oh, that's one of the trees they're gonna cut down. Like, you know what that, but it's the first time that we've seen, like, because until then I'm like, oh, is this our world? Are the, you know, is this another planet?
Yeah, just, for
is
sure.
It
yeah,
a Sasquatch
yeah.
planet? Like,
is this the Cretaceous period? Like, you know, you don't
yeah,
know. You don't
yeah.
know.
Well, and I, yeah, like, that's something that, like, I was kind of watching the movie, like, looking at stuff like that, of, like, this is a situation where it's, like, I would love to have a conversation with the Zellner brothers about it, because I'm so interested in, you know, you're right, it does feel like, and the, you know, not to spoil the last shot of the movie, but it's, like, the last shot of the movie is very evocative of this idea that you are mythologizing these creatures and putting them into, you know, basically like lore, mysticism, a thing that only exists in the past, while these creatures still exist in the present and have very real issues that they're dealing with, which is like, so you're kind of erasing their present struggle while honoring their past struggle, which is like, exactly, it's like, that's like native shit, you know, that's like genocide shit. And it's like, and I, it's, to me, I'm like, it's so weird that they made a movie about that using characters that originated in Native lore and are really important to a lot of Pacific Northwest Native people, while also erasing Native people from the story. Is like, oh, you're like guilty of the thing that your movie's about, you know? And it's like, I'm just so curious if they like knew they were doing that, because I don't think that they did, you know?
Yeah.
We'll have to set you up with the Zoom, with the Zelda.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it's very interesting to me, because I came at it with a different takeaway, but like somehow kind of aligned with yours, in the sense of that, yeah, I didn't know any of that about the Sasquatch's origin, you know, like to me I was like okay but there's just a lot of like, there were like elements of like things they were doing that felt like this was like an almost allegory for natives in a sense, in just like when they would like commune together and chant. And so it's very interesting to now hear your point, Joey, which makes me kind of wonder that too. But I am curious, because yeah, that's so interesting. But I think as the day, like as life goes on, it is kind of like what you said when you started out, where every kind of monster has its monster or cryptid or mythology has its origin and a relation to a culture. And I think that it is now this like, we're in this new kind of media literacy stage where we're kind of connecting those back together after they've been separated, because that was so interesting, especially for it to be so specific to you and getting that info.
Friend of the pod, Jonah Ray, does a great song on the first of the new, quote unquote, new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000 called Every Country Has a Monster. And it's about the nice. Sort of global tradition of monster myths.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question of everyone? Back to the shit. Back to the shitting and grunting. Why I brought you all here today.
What was your favorite, top five favorite shits?
Top five favorite shit. So, again, it is part of how they're, it's not even communicating. It's just this thing of, you see them releasing themselves in all sorts of ways. You see from lactation to sex to shitting to peeing to whatever. They're disgusting in the way that all creatures are disgusting, because everybody
all poops. Hominids.
Yes. But there's a few elements in this, like Alonzo was talking about, you know, the first time they see a road and they just do this like Monty Python feeling back and forth, where they like look, they all look one day way down this road that just goes on forever, and they're screaming, and they look the other way, it's screaming, and then they do it till they start shitting. Like, how did those comedic, because to me I was like, well, this is clearly done for like this moment of levity, and it's so broad and so absurdist, and they've kind of built it in, but it was also legitimately funny, mostly because I was like, I have to laugh, there's so much shit right now. But how did those comedic moments work for you all?
Well, yeah, and the comedic heightening on it was, first they start pissing on the road, then they start shitting, and then they start squirting Breast Milk.
Yes.
The perfect comedic heightening.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's in the improv handbook, actually. So, yeah.
The progression.
So I think that this is why, like, I appreciate how weird this movie is as far as, like, you know, moments like that and beats like that. And, like something that I was, like, noting while watching it is the amount of times that, like, the Sasquatch would do a weird thing and then they would just cut to, like, a deer doing a reaction shot.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's just, like, I feel like the energy of the movie is, can we make this a movie? It's, like, kind of, like, from what we understand about storytelling in movies, would this work for 90 minutes? And it, like, mostly does, you know.
Someone dared them to make it.
Yeah, right. Kind of. Like,
there are a couple of death scenes in this. Like, there is at least one extended death scene that has genuinely, it's traumatic, it's tension filled.
Yeah.
It's also almost funny at a moment. You're like, what am I watching? But it's just this ongoing thing. It's like car crash. And to me, like, that kind of filmmaking, I'm like, I love this. If you were going to tell me the scene was in this, of how this creature is dying, like, absolutely insane.
Yeah, it was that thing of, like, well, either he's dead or they're about to invent the lever. One of the two.
Yeah.
The two
yeah.
But yeah, do we think these guys know what a fulcrum is? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so yeah. Good.
Well, that's something that, like, it was so cool. I think that for me is the scene where I was like, oh, this is a real movie, you know, like, for lack of a better term. You know what I'm talking about. It's that's when it really clicked in. And, like,
it's not just vignettes.
Yeah, it's like, I understand the emotional stakes of these characters. It's like, that's when it really clicked in. Like, oh, I think this might be good. Like, you know,
yeah.
it's so well directed. It's so well shot. It's so, like, it's so well acted. And it's like, you know, these are actors with, like, I don't know, like, 6 inches of prosthetics on their face. It's like, you feel it in a way that's, like, really cool.
Well, you see their eyes are doing a lot. You see them, yeah. And I think they're making the most of that.
Their eyes and they're shitting. Yep. vote.
Yes, nah. Yes. The way that we vote for things on this pod is screen it being the highest, stream it being the next level, and skip it being self-explanatory. Who wants to start?
I'll go. I may be an anomaly. I'm a screen it. Not only do I love, you know, we just spoke about the mid-budget film, the whatever. I think it's very important and exciting to see films like this, and this is in theaters, like, small release, it's Bleecker Street doing it, but that indie filmmakers and the Zellners have made a handful of films at this point who are pushing boundaries of what you're doing with fantasy or with filmmaking in terms of, oh, we're gonna do something, you know what, don't worry about it, we're not making anything we're worried about anybody else making, and to go all in with it. Like, you can tell the physical training that they all had, like, how they're holding each other, the how they set up the sort of hierarchy and structures within this, like, you're watching all this time. And I also appreciated that I was pretty sure 3/4 of the way in that there was going to be zero takeaway or emotional resonance. And then it ended and I was very like, oh, I'm feeling pretty contemplative right now. Like, I'd like to just sort of sit and think about what this could mean. And anyway, I just love super inventive swings in filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say screen it for similar reasons. I think that this is a movie that you have to watch with a group. This would be such a weird watch alone in your living room. Like, it's a movie that, like, you have to talk about with people afterwards. And it's a movie event in, like, the sense of this needs to be watched with a group, because, like, the messaging and what the movie is and what it's about and what the characters are going through is entirely inference. And it's like half the fun of it since seeing it has been, like, talking to my friends about just, like, what did you think of that? And, like, what did this mean? And, like, what was that scene about? So, yeah, I think screen it, or, you know, if you're listening to this after when it's on streaming, stream it, like, with friends, just so that you can, like, talk about it with people afterwards.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm also a screen it. And I think in a weird way, like, this is the kind of movie that for people who are not used to, like, if you don't want to go full bore into, you know, slow cinema, this is a good kind of midway movie that sort of teaches you that some movies you have to sort of be quiet and slow down and let the movie set the pace, you know, and it's not going to be like a lot of cuts, and it's not going to be throwing stuff at you and like music cues and this and that. Like, you have to just sort of like breathe with this movie, follow it where it wants to go, and it will take you places. And I think a lot of movies that I like, you know, are ones that kind of require you to get real zen about, you know, not expecting a cut anytime soon, you know, and not like that we're just going to be in this room for a while and that's okay. And I think if you're not used to that kind of movie, this is a good sort of starter film in that direction, because you're not going to get dialogue, you're not going to get a lot of the things that people do to sort of tell you a story, but you will be told a story.
Yes.
If you would, your vote.
I'm going to go with Screen It as well. I think there's just like a lot of gorgeous shots that I think would look so good on the big screen of just out in nature. Mm. And think it really did make me, was like, damn, I want to go on a hike. you know? But like, yeah, I think for that reason alone, it just would be such a fun movie going experience. Also just the energy of just seeing, like, you know, this is Denis Villeneuve's dream right here. No dialogue, just just grunts in action.
Also, and I have a whole theory and shits. I do have a theory that all men turn into either Sasquatch obsessives or UFO. And so there's just a whole, everybody has an uncle that could get into watching this. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Is that help whole, how much do you think about the Roman Empire? How much do you think exactly about Sasquatch?
I'm like, no, not my world. They think about Sasquatch or UFOs. Yeah.
I love that when you're asked that Roman Empire question, at least for me, it's like, I'm like, not at all. And then I pause and then I'm like, well, maybe sometimes. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Joey Clift,
Drea Clark.
All right. It's been a while since we added any new names or objects to the Hall of Excellence. So in honor of the dialogue-free movie we discussed today, we're going to go around and nominate our picks for Best Wordless Performance. One caveat, since a lot of great non-speaking characters eventually break their silence for a laugh or for emotional impact, it's okay to pick a character that says almost nothing. Who wants to jump in first?
Okay, what the hell? I will. So I was thinking about this, and I was like, Rinko Kikuchi and the Brothers Bloom. And then I was like, no one's seen that movie. It's I'm now hungry to win. I got the last one. And so now I'm going to be shamelessly pandering to the audience. But no, I was thinking about this and I thought, okay, if we rule out like actual silent cinema, which is a whole other category, I got to go with Harpo Marx. Like, Harpo Marx, over the course of his career, if you can nail it down to like Justin Duck Soup if you want, or Justin A Night at the Opera, but always Harpo Marx, like a brilliant, brilliant comedian, never said a word on film, just honked a horn and played the harp. But like just a genius at physical comedy and at facial reactions. And for all of the hyper wordplay of like Groucho and Chico and the other Marx brothers, Harpo in Never Saying Anything is often, I think, like the greatest one of all.
Deep cut. That's what he's here for. What are we even doing if you're not giving us a Marx brother?
Yes. All right. Anyone have another one?
You go first.
Well, so I'm torn here. So I have one. I heard this and was like, oh, I know exactly what I think of best wordless performances. Like, iconic, haunting, like, you know it immediately, and yet it contains depth. But then it's not funny at all, nor does it really have an and that's Michael Myers in Halloween. Like, ooh, to me, like, oh, Michael Myers...
Snipe, I should have went first.
Oh, dang. Because I have another one. Go for
it. No, this is how it works. No. Pick it. Okay. Rock with it.
But to me, like, do you know what I mean? They're not, like, playing it off with him being like, did I do that? Like, at the end, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not, that's not,
I
mean, the...
I think Halloween would be better if Michael Myers said, oh, did I do that after every murder? It's like, stab.
Did I do that?
Yeah, honestly, with direct, the mask
direct
on...
to camera, of course. Direct yeah, to camera.
I feel like with the mask on, that's a pretty easy sound edit that we could make come to
with
life.
With the hand up to the mouth, like, ooh.
Yeah, I've been a I'm bad naughty. Little boy. Yeah.
But the Michael Myers, like, it's that relentless, like, he built a whole, there's a whole, like, iconography of other villains that follow that, right? Like, the wordless behemoth in the corner. But you also, because we do get some sort of backstory with him of his psychosis and childhood trauma or whatever, just being a raw sociopath, like, you know who he is. You can't even see his face, and his performance does that. And so, to me, I was like, well, come on. You can't... How do I not reward what's going on there? Who good. Has stood so good?
There you go. Good choice. Yeah.
Thanks.
My choice. You know, he's a character that there have been a lot of iterations in this character in cinema. And he's, you know, I think one of the most famous characters that doesn't really talk that we know of. So I got to put it up for, you know, that large orange tabby cat Garfield. You know, it's like, he doesn't talk. We hear his thoughts. So I think that's a loophole.
Oh, it's a love that technicality.
It's a thought bubble. It's, he's not talking.
I will allow it specifically because it's very on brand with for you.
So on brand. You mean when we met Joey because he was our guest for our episode of Cats that we did for Max One Drive? Because that's how I was introduced to him. It's like, this is Joey. He's a big cat guy.
Oh yeah. He started the, like, UCB Cat Underground Network, or was it the Los Angeles Cat Underground Network?
Yeah, it's the LA Underground Cat Network. It's now spawned into three separate Facebook groups totaling like 40,000 members. It's just a Facebook community for Los Angeles comedians to share pictures of their cats. Are there three different groups because there was drama? Yes.
Of course there was. Even better. I literally have two cats asleep on me right now.
Cats Brigade.
But you know, other than shouting out Garfield, I got to say, you know, honestly, Wally from Pixar's Wally, I think, is a good character. To include
I think that
what I appreciate about Sasquatch Sunset is they just made the choice of there's no dialogue in this movie and just went for it. And Wally, I feel like the first 30 minutes of Wally before there's dialogue is genius. And like watching Wally, I was like, I wish that was the whole movie.
Yes.
You know? And I know he technically, you know, beeps and says like Eva and stuff, but it's still like, oh, I wish they had like the guts to just make it about a robot who beeps, you know?
Yeah. No. The first half of Wally is like one of the greatest films ever made. And then it's fine.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You know, more people need the guts to have these heroes that stand silent. The more people need to have the guts to have someone figure it out as they mosey on and walk through life and show us that life ain't easy, which is why my pick is Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean
nice.
as the silent protagonist who stands against all is gotta be the Bean.
I
Mr.
love that.
Bean.
I love mostly thinking that your introduction to Rowan Atkinson was Love Actually. That makes that even funnier to me. Mr.
Yes.
Bean. Oh my God.
There it is. This is gonna be
tough choices.
Impressive list. There's only been one time that a guest has usurped all three of us and taken the throne, and Garfield might be the one that takes it.
I think Garfield's gonna win. I'm gonna lobby for this so hard.
Well, now the rest is up to you. You can vote for a winner by going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/groups/maximum_film. Or if you're not on Facebook, but you have a strong opinion about this topic, shoot an email of your vote to maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. And all the Facebook fans, why don't you head over to the Cat Network, share pictures of your cats.
Yeah.
Now it's time.
Actually, don't. There's too many people in that group. It's hard to moderate. Don't join it.
Well, it's funny because it's one of those things where I think of that guy at the party meme, and that's you in the group, whereas no one knows I started this group.
You joke, but the thing about it is, if I go to like parties in LA, there are a lot of people that'll walk up to me and say like, did you create the cat Facebook groups? And I'll be like, yes, I did. And it's like, nobody wants to talk about the Emmy I was nominated for.
Yeah, no.
Nobody wants to talk about group. My like comedy career doing UCB stuff. They're just like, are you the cat Facebook group guy? And I'm like, yes.
Yes, that is me.
You're known for Emmy. Something.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
I'll go because I'm very excited. It's actually one of my favorite movies. Speaking of Rinku Kikuchi.
Go ahead. Try that again?
No, I can tell you want to say it.
Rinku Kikuchi.
Yep. Speaking of her, she starred in a previous film by the Zellner brothers called Kumiko the Treasure Hunter. Mm-hmm. I have a real soft spot for this film, largely. Well, the whole movie, I think, is great. But in there, like I said, they really like to kind of deconstruct mythology. And the mythology in Kumiko is the motion picture Fargo. So this is kind of an unofficial sequel to Fargo. And if you remember that, there's like a bag of money that's lost in Minnesota when these like criminals, whatever. And she plays this woman who works in this insane office like society in Japan who's obsessed with it and has Fargo on VHS and decided that it's a treasure map. And she gets herself to Minnesota to try and track down this lost treasure. And it is dark and strange and unique and completely its own thing. And if you're kind of getting a sense of them as filmmakers, that's there. But I think it's a really engaging watch. And if you love Fargo, all the better. There's all sorts of little Easter eggs.
Nice.
Ooh.
I was thinking about movies where, like, you know, creatures that live in the forest find themselves encroached upon by humanity and realize that, you know, they're about to be pushed out. And so that brought to mind maybe my favorite movie to come out of Studio Ghibli, Pompoko. Which is about a whole tribe of kind of dog raccoons. I forget what they're called, but basically their resources are being limited. Trees are being cut down. Houses are being built closer and closer to where they live. Food is harder to come by, and they have to figure out if they can use their shape shifting abilities to somehow keep. To protect what's left of their habitat. It's a funny and visually delightful, and I sob every time I watch it. It's on Max, Pompoko.
Nice. Much like the future of film, their resources are limited.
Why? Once again, why did they call that out in the Variety article? That guy's just trying to do his job. Like, why? That guy doesn't deserve. His industry's collapsing.
It was on YouTube. They would figure they'd get busted if they didn't.
That poor nervous dude and his teleprompter.
Yeah, that guy's not an actor. That guy's like just doing his best. So I mentioned that I think that like some of my issue with Sasquatch Sunset is that just like I kind of wish there were more, you know, like native hands involved in making it, just because, you know, it's like he's a character that is originated in Pacific Northwest indigenous culture. So on that note, I want to shout out a really dope native made feature that is coming out on Apple on June 21st. It's called Fancy Dance. It's directed by Erica Tremblay, starring Lily Gladstone in her big post Killers of the Flower Moon film. And, you know, it's just a fantastic 90-minute, like, you know, like, just, like, straight indie film that got Apple distribution. It's basically about a, Lily Gladstone's character's sister goes missing, and to help her niece get through it, she decides to bring her niece to a powwow. So it's kind of like a little bit of a coming-of-age movie, a little bit of a road movie, a little bit of a mystery movie. And it's just, like, beautiful, and it's such a great film, and, you know, like, definitely, like, watch Sasquatch Sunset, but also watch native made films, and Fancy Dance is a good one to start with or check out.
I second that. Yeah. It's great.
Can't wait.
Oh man. And mine is going to be one. I'm not sure if we're going to do this one. I got a shout out to my, to, you know, I always got to shout out my fellow sexy brown men. You know, we out here in the street. We're all trying to make it in this industry. So, you know, Dev Patel directing Monkey Man. I want John Wick for all races, killing your oppressor. Like, can we? We can go down the list. Like, I need the Mexican version. I need the Nigerian version. Let's do South Africa. Like, I was like, oh, I love this. Is like a double whammy for me. You get like the fun, creative, like hyper violence, and you feel good about it because they're all bad people. But then you're also like, I will say, I left that film, you know, as a, like, you know, a writer and filmmaker myself, you know, I feel like it's very, you know, hip and cool to try and like present and position yourself as an ally, as a filmmaker. And I feel like Dev really put his money where his mouth is by having this like dope trans storyline baked into it, and not in a very integral way that like kind of is threaded within the like soul of the story, and not like just put there to be like, yeah, look at what I did. It was like, no, this there's like,
it's culturally organic.
And I loved it. It was so badass. The moment where they all show up and
biggest cheer of the movie. It's such a rad moment. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's, and you know, I say this all the time, but that's what movies are all about, man. That's a, you know, like when you can make, you know, the underrepresented feel represented and badass at the same time, I think you're doing great work. So shout out to Monkey Man.
Oh, and hey, while we're in staff picks, my pick from a couple weeks ago, Hundreds of Beavers, is now available on demand. You can rent it at like Apple and iTunes and all the, or, you know, Amazon, all those places. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's a delirious treat.
Nice. Yes. Hundreds of Beavers, great title for a movie, or what my search history looks like. You know, I thought of it once you said it, and I couldn't get out my head.
So hundreds? You're like, I can't have 50. I need hundreds. And it needs to be plural. More than 199. All in one picture.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, Joey. Where can people keep up with you or check out more of your work? You know, some of that Emmy-nominated writing.
Oh, snap. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everybody, nobody go to the LA Underground Cat Network on Facebook. There's too many people in it. It gives me anxiety. But if you want to follow me on social media, you can check me out on Twitter/X, Blue Sky, and TikTok at JoeyTainment, and then Instagram and Threads at Joey Clift with 5 or 6 eyes. Reason for that's a 12-year-old took Joey Clift with one eye, so I just have to deal. I've been saying that for a while. He's probably like 18 right now, so I could probably like legally fight him to take it back if I wanted to, which I do want to. And then, you can check out season 3 of Spirit Rangers on Netflix. I was a writer, consulting producer on the show. We were nominated for 7 Emmy Awards last year. And, it's a kids fantasy adventure series about like Native kids who work as junior park rangers in a Southern California park. And it's just a show I'm really proud of. And this is our third and final season. And I think that we really like stuck the landing with how we finished it off. And then you can check out my Comedy Central digital series, Gone Native, at gonenative.tv. It's a series of short animated comedy PSAs about just, you know, weird microaggressions that Native folks experience. So, it's all the places you can check me out. And once again, go see the Garfield movie and Mad Max Furiosa on May 24th. I want those movies to both be hits, so there are sequels. I want a million. I don't want Hundreds of Beavers. I want Hundreds of Garfields. That's what I want.
Yes. Oh, man. Well, as always, thank you, Dre and Alonzo, for another wonderful show. It's always good to have you. And listeners, thank you for listening. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org, or find us on any of our social media channels that are all linked in the show notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about Chicken for Linda. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart, and our senior producer is also wonderful. Her name is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. All right, bye-bye.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.